This is a Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Everybody, welcome in to another fantastic episode of the Take It Easy radio show. My name is Kyle. Welcome in on the first day of October. I hope you are having a great day so far. Please, thank you and good afternoon wherever you are listening, whether it is here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, whether you are checking us out on the weekend over on the Take It Easy podcast network. I appreciate each and every one of you for stopping in to chat with us today. It is a great day of sports. I'm super happy to be here. We always start the show by talking about what it is that we see in the world of sports, and today is a big one because right now, live over our airwaves, we have the Chicago White Sox and Oakland Athletics playing a win or go home game three against each other in Oakland, day baseball. Luis Robert hit a home run out to Mount Davis to give the White Sox a 1-0 lead early on in this game. They then loaded the bases in the second inning before being retired with two outs and stranding the bases loaded. A bullpen day for the White Sox, which is really looking like it's going to come back to bite them. Mike Fiers. People may remember the name Mike Fiers more than his pitching escapade, but being the guy who blew the water on the Houston Astros scandal. That is where most people have their recollection of Luis Robert. And he was Mike Fiers. I'm sorry, of Mike Fiers. And Mike Fiers, after giving up the home run to Luis Robert, Mike Fiers was removed from the game. I don't know if he was a starter, if he was an opener, what their plan was, how they wanted to go about this. But they're in the bottom of the second. The White Sox are up 1-0. We may cut in and out of that as we keep going. It's baseball's wild, wild west out here. The Reds, you can just go bleep yourselves. That was just an awful performance by Cincinnati. They scored zero runs in the playoffs. Did you ever really make the playoffs if you only scored zero runs? I mean, Cincinnati, come on. Cincy. This was a little bit sad. I just got to say, this one was certainly a bit sad on your part. But if you scored zero runs in the playoffs, no matter how good Trevor Bauer pitches for you in his last game in a Reds uniform, or no matter how good a performance Luis Castillo gives you before the bullpen ends up getting blown up in the eighth inning by the Braves, you're going to go home. The Marlins and Cubs got a rainout today, which was obviously, you know, we'll see you tomorrow in the afternoon at Wrigley. I don't know how that one's going to go down, but should be interesting to watch. And, of course, 4 o'clock, baby. I'm holding out hope. 4 o'clock on the West Coast. It's currently 1:04 out on the West. But 7 o'clock Eastern, if you're listening out here in Detroit, Central Time. But regardless, 3 hours away, my Padres, my childhood team, shout out 619, they are fighting for their playoff lives for the first time in my memorable lifetime. And that's where I want to start today's episode of the radio show, is to be Homerism and talk about Homerism and talk about rooting for the most cursed sports town in America, which used to be Cleveland, but Cleveland got one. So now the Padres are a special kind of curse, but unlike Cleveland, where they have the drive, the shot, the fumble, all the other kinds of mishaps Cleveland has had, a perpetual mediocrity, et cetera, et cetera. The San Diego sports curse is a little bit more of a darker turn, which understandably is something I didn't recall until after the fact. And for people who are lifelong San Diegans and beach bums down in OB or out there in downtown watching the Padres from their parking lots or watching it from atop of giant downtown hotels, watching baseball games that, you know, Chris Paddock is getting rocked for six runs and we're going down 1-0, even though I'm just happy to be there. I'm a more nuanced fan, and I decided a while ago, and you know, the last couple of weeks we've talked about making personal decisions and making important distinctions in our own lives and, you know, what brings us joy. And it's why when we had that debate this week, every time someone asked me if I was going to watch the debate and I responded no, and they talked about they were watching the debate, I would just ask them, why are you doing that to yourself? Like, what are you going to gain from watching it? And the people who said it was an entertaining experience and it felt like they had an obligation to, first of all, you don't have an obligation to anything unless it's like water cooler talk, but we all at home at this point, we're not even going to class, we're not even going to work, and it's hard for us to interact with people. So if it's just a universal connecting point, okay. I mean, it's a weird universal connecting point, but, you know, all right. But also, you know, you're going to get angry. Like, people know that this anger is going to pop up in this situation. And so I just don't know how you go on from there. But I digress a little bit. I decided long ago, and I think it was kind of when I started breaking out into the sports media, quote unquote, complex and recording podcasts every single day and becoming more polished as I do something like this or talk about whatever sports thing is going on or whatever real life world topic, things like Black Lives Matter, talking about race relations, gender relations, even political stuff. Because again, when we're talking about things like race, gender, civil rights, and politics all as a whole, something you're going to have to do is that it's easier for people who align with one another to distinct themselves as one side or the other, because if you don't have that, it's just going to be the banter back and forth like you see during, after, and before the election or the debate that occurred on Tuesday. So what does all of this have to do with the Padres? Well, a while ago, I decided that my emotional stability was not going to be dependent on sports, no matter whether or not I watched 12 hours of baseball yesterday and the entire NBA Finals, yes, even when it was a 32-point game in Game 1 in the fourth quarter, I watched all of it. Now, part of it might have been making jokes and humor and memes at the same time, but I did watch the entire game. So despite the fact that I put 12 hours of my day into that, I also said that I'm not going to put my emotional stability into that the way you see a lot with college football fans, the way you see a lot with people who ride or literally ride or die with their baseball team or their football team. Not as much basketball. Basketball, for a younger generation, it just seems absolutely foreign to ride or die with your team. Same thing can happen with football, but less so depending on who you are and where you come from as a football fan, not just black or white, not just Republican or Democratic state, but also whether you're a man or a woman. Like, you can ride differently in sports in different ways. And so I decided, I think a while ago, years ago, that as I grew older, I was not going to invest a large part of my emotional stability in sports, despite the fact that I watched 12 hours of sports yesterday, and the fact that I'm obsessed with it, the fact I talk about it every single morning and come on here at 1 o'clock in the middle of the afternoon, sometimes recording from a bathroom in order to talk to all of you about the San Diego Padres and the bleeping Cincinnati Reds scoring zero runs in the playoffs. It's an obsession, but it is not a large part of my emotional stability. And so as I'm talking to other Padres fans, people of my childhood, my family, about that game yesterday, and they are riding or dying with everything going on, I'm saying I'm excited to be there. And the Cardinals in game one yesterday, they scored 4 runs in the first 13 pitches of the game. 4 runs in the first 13 pitches. And so at that moment, the joy of having October baseball in San Diego had not worn off for me. And I was saying at the time, it's going to wear off at some point and I'm going to be pissed. And it never happened. This is the first time in my memorable lifetime any of my teams had made it this far in a season. Seriously. When I grew up, I was born into the Laker fandom. First Lakers experience, first basketball memory, 2009, Kobe Bryant wins the championship over Orlando. Second one, Lakers win the championship over the Celtics. When they beat the Celtics, I thought there were 7 teams in the NBA. I did not have this appreciation for the sport in the way that it goes now. And so what you're seeing is this whole different world where I have teams in the playoffs. And so as a Lakers fan, did not make the playoffs or a deep playoff run for 8 years. The Lakers are losers. Don't get this wrong. For 2 entire generations of basketball fans, they're very young and they don't have a media personality. I'm talking to you here on Open Talk Radio 3013 The Flash, a fantastic platform, but it's not ESPN. If I went on ESPN, it would be unlike anything anyone has ever heard before. Why? Because I come from a different generation than what we are seeing currently in positions of power. This is millennial generation and Gen X generation first beginning to assume power. Gen X is firmly entrenched in it. Obama being elected president was when that officially became the indoctrination. Like Obama's election as president became Gen X assuming power. And now slowly but steadily, the millennial generation is starting to assume power. And Generation Z, like I am, early Gen Z, is starting to enter the workforce. They are finally grown up. And that is where you're starting to see a different mindset of how the world is perceived, a different mindset of how sports are perceived, and a different mindset of how they view the exact same situation as someone else. We talked about this on the podcast about the Big Three Heat and how the Big Three Heat, if you ask someone 25 or younger, are almost universally beloved. Apart from tribalism, like there are 20-year-olds who worship Michael Jordan, and it makes no sense because they didn't watch him ever play. Like apart from the tribalism, if you ask someone in their 20s about the Big Three Heat, they are universally beloved, despite the fact how revered that team was. And so when I say universally, side note, when I say universally, as universal as it can be. And so the Lakers are losers for 2 generations of basketball fans, the one before me with a lot of teenagers right now and mine, late teens, early 20s. The Lakers are losers. I root for the Padres. This is the first time in my memorable lifetime they have made the playoffs. I root for the LA Kings, but I first got into that because of their 2014 championship run. In baseball, I also rooted for the Texas Rangers for a decade. And in football, I was a San Diego Superchargers fan. Superchargers fans, they are losers. The Lakers are losers. The Padres are losers. The LA Kings now are losers. The Texas Rangers are losers. I have rooted for loser teams. My college team is San Diego State. They're irrelevant. They win a lot, but they are irrelevant on a national stage. So I root for losers. And I don't put a lot of my emotional stability in that, probably because I rooted for losers for so many years. And the fan bases are a bunch of losers. And so here we are. The Padres are in the playoffs, and I'm sitting here talking to my friends from high school, talking to my family. And what I'm seeing is everyone is riding or dying with every single pick. And I'm like, I'm just happy to be here. While you feel – okay, so this is another psychology thing. It's a quick side note. So you know when you feel nervous, what happens? When you feel nervous, your palms get sweaty, you feel a little clammy, and your heart starts beating a little bit faster. Well, what happens when you're excited? Get a little sweaty, hands feel clammy, your heart starts to beat a little bit faster. They are the same part of your emotional complex. I forgot which part of your brain. It's in the right side of your brain, but I'm not sure which part of the brain it's called, which different subsection of your brain. But basically, nervousness and excitement invoke the same emotions. So instead of saying, I feel nervous, instead say, I feel excited. Trust me, it works. Because while everyone I knew was riding or dying with every pitch in nervousness and frustration and anger, even though they weren't actually that angry, even though they weren't actually that angry, nervous, or frustrated, I just felt total excitement. This is exciting. This is an adrenaline rush. We are in the playoffs for the first time in my memorable lifetime. And we lost. So be it. I'll be sitting down at 4 o'clock today watching that exact same game for them to stay alive in the playoffs. So be it. And so what we find is that we can either ride hard emotionally or we can ride soft emotionally. And part of it is a generational divide. Tribalism passes it down. And again, most people tend to have a deep emotional connection with their sports teams. And my favorite quote ever about that is that fans want this to be a deep, deep emotional complexion with their team. They want to put a lot of their emotional stability in a college football team for a school they didn't even attend. That's how much people want this to be a deep emotional connection that means something to them. I feel that way with the Padres and none of the other teams I root for now. The Chargers abandoned us. The Lakers, I don't root for as strongly. If the Heat win the finals, I'm going to be excited no matter what because I'm not going to ride or die with nervousness on every situation. It's why I found myself rooting for the Nuggets was because I felt the nervousness in my body. And I'm like, oh, I want the Nuggets here. I want the Nuggets here. I'm like, wait, why do I want the Nuggets? I'm like, because I'm not excited. I'm nervous. You got to control those emotions and rein them in when you're watching a sporting event. And so the Chargers left San Diego. Heartbreaking, but almost as heartbreaking as 2006, losing a playoff game to the New England Patriots. 2007, making the AFC Championship, losing to the New England Patriots, who ended up going 16-0 that year, or whatever, 18-0 before they lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl. Phillip Rivers playing with a torn ACL. I remember that. I remember that moment vividly. The following year, lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Year after that, win their fourth straight division title. Win 11 consecutive games to end the season. First round bye. Home game, lose to the Jets. Number two seed in the AFC, lose to the Jets. First playoff game. 11 straight wins to finish the season, lose to the Jets. Don't make the playoffs again for three seasons. Make it in 2013. Defeat the Cincinnati Bengals. Lose a game they weren't supposed to win to the Denver Broncos. Last playoff memory I ever had of the Chargers. And then they moved to Los Angeles. No longer a fan. I have disdain for Dean Spanos, as most San Diegans do. Back at the days of my father's childhood, Los Angeles Clippers, previously the San Diego Clippers, moved to Los Angeles. No championship. The baseball team for the Padres, two World Series runs, have never won a World Series game. They're 0-8 in World Series games, have not been to the playoffs since 2006. If you take the last 50 years of baseball history and put the records side by side, the Padres, among 30 franchises, finish 30th in winning percentage. The Padres are the most irrelevant franchise in baseball. They are the Cleveland Browns of baseball, and now they are all San Diego has. So the San Diego sports curse is a little bit more dark than that. You see, the San Diego Chargers first made the Super Bowl in 1995. We can go back farther. We'll start here. 1995, San Diego makes the Super Bowl, led predominantly by a man named Junior Seau. Well, Junior Seau is the greatest middle linebacker to ever play the game. Growing up as a kid, I had two small jerseys in my room, a Philip Rivers 2006 jersey and a Junior Seau 1997 child jersey. Junior Seau killed himself in 2012 following battles with depression and what would later become, he becomes the poster child for CTE. There's a great 30 for 30 out on that you can check out about Junior Seau. It's a great story. I encourage everyone to watch it. The Padres make the World Series in 1998 after they tore down the entire franchise in 1993. The greatest player to represent the franchise and represent the city ever is Tony Gwynn. And Tony Gwynn died a few years after Junior Seau, after a battle with mouth cancer, because he became the poster of chewing tobacco and what that can do and having that be removed from the game. And there's just these dark ways that the curse keeps popping up, whether it be the mysterious death of a former player, whether it be season-ending injuries, whether it be, in the case of the Padres this year, losing just before your first playoff game ever, or I'm sorry, in my lifetime ever, losing your top two starters that you traded a whole bunch of players for and now are facing the brink of elimination. And again, they might have won the last two games. If you're listening to this on Saturday, they might have won these last two games, in which case I will be gloating hard about it on Sunday's episode of Wired Up. The odds aren't great, and you're not going to hear me say that we're in trouble. You're not going to hear me say we're going to lose the series no matter what happens, but this is the part that I think more people other than myself are having to compromise with is I talked about before having to make decisions about college football and whether to watch college football because everything is too hot right now and whether to read news and download news apps and constantly be checking the latest news on your phone. Talked about that last week. If it doesn't bring you happiness and you know what the end game is, you don't have to invest hours in whatever it's going to be. And in this case, I'm not going to invest emotional stability in sports because it's just unhealthy. Why would I invest an unhealthy amount in sports, regardless of how much fun it is? I will cry, no question about it, if the Padres win the World Series sometime in my lifetime. No question about that. But what is difficult to comprehend and to come to terms with as we watch all of this play out, whether it be in the NFL, your team, whether it be your college football team, and really the politicization of college football, but you can choose to ignore that. If sports want to be your escape and you're going to invest way too much of your emotional stability in it, your choice. If you're not familiar with what it's doing to you, I'm at least giving you an option here. I'm at least telling you, hey, this is what you might be choosing subconsciously. Because as I don't know, well, here's the thing. I've been nervous and emotional in sporting events before, and I find that I don't enjoy them as much as when I'm just excited to be there, which is anything. When we're nervous, we get tense. We freeze up. We can't perform at our best. And when we're excited, we're relaxed. We're feeling calm. And we can enjoy it way more, whatever it is, whether it's a fear of flying, whether it's a nervousness around your team playing in a big game, which for some cities might be playing for a championship. For me, it's just making the playoffs. It's just having a baseball game in October. because it's the first time in my memorable lifetime that's ever happened. Padres made the playoffs in 2006. I was 5 years old when that happened. My earliest baseball memory was 2007, a year later. So choose however you want, and really just practice it, period. I mean, it took me just changing the mindset. I heard it from Simon Sinek. He talked to me, or I heard a presentation about from him. Check him out on YouTube or on his podcast. But Simon Sinek basically said, like, nervousness and excitement invoke the same responses in your body. Therefore, you can train the mind to recognize nervousness as excitement instead of nervousness, or at the very least combat things that you should be excited about and feel nervous about. Because at that point, we tense up and cortisol starts going through our bodies and we freeze, we feel tense and we can't operate. We don't feel safe. And this happens a lot in work environments. Feel excited instead of nervous. And no one's perfect. I'm doing great. I'm doing all-time great. This is actually a great Teddy Roosevelt. It's either Franklin Roosevelt or what's the English guy? I forgot his name. World War II. Winston Churchill. I believe it was Winston Churchill, actually, that said, like, if you're right 70% of the time, then you are the greatest leader to ever exist. Because most of us are right 50% of the time. And we're doing good if we're at 50% of the time. It's the same thing with gambling. If you're right 60% of the time, you can go to Vegas and make $1 million. Like 60% of the time is right, which means we're going to be wrong 40% of the time if we are the greatest millionaires in the world or whatever it might be. So at the very least, we're going to be wrong a lot. So we're going to feel nervous when we should feel excited. And we're going to be excited when we feel nervous. But with practice, you can get better at feeling more excited than nervous. And then maybe then, I don't think there's a direct correlation here, but I do know that it made it a lot easier for me to be like, hey, I don't need to put all of my emotional stability in this thing. Yeah, there's this San Diego sports curse that exists, but I'm happy either way. It can go however it goes, and I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay, and I'm just going to keep watching sports, and I'm going to keep enjoying it for the foreseeable future. We are at the end of the second inning here over in the White Sox and Athletics. They have now reached the bottom of the third. The White Sox add 2 runs in the top of the inning to help them take a 3-0 lead. It looks like the White Sox are asserting themselves because, like, imagine if this season had gone down the path in baseball, had it been like, oh, we have 5 teams in the playoffs, and the White Sox got knocked out on that last day of the season. The White Sox can legitimately win this thing. They've got a matchup with Houston in the next round, and by the way, I think Houston is a really tough matchup. I know the 5-game series isn't as random as the 3-game series, but Houston is a really tough matchup, and they're going to prove that through all the flukiness of the start of the season and losing Garrett Cole and losing Justin Verlander, losing A.J. Hinch, losing Jeff Luhnow, that they can still pull something off here. And I'm interested to see how all that plays out. And, you know, if Houston makes an ALCS run, I don't know if they make it farther than that, because I suspect that the winner of this Rays and Yankees series, given just how dominant those teams looked, I think the winner of this Rays and Yankees series is probably the prohibitive favorite for the LCS. But if the Astros make that LCS run, it is a major accomplishment considering what Astro Ball represents. You know what? I was planning to go to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning, but let's talk about Astro Ball real quick. Because Astro Ball is the greatest baseball revolution since the Oakland Athletic Moneyball. And the Houston Astros, over a span of 7 years, the Houston Astros built up what was the sustainable model of baseball in the fact that they were going to be able to replenish talent. They were going to be this mercenary team that was able to compete year in and year out. We talk about the Patriot way in football. I'm sorry, in football. The Patriot way is a little bit of a mercenary style in that the Patriots win, but many a times they don't have fun. Now, this year's Patriot way is a little bit different than the past Patriot ways. But we know when we invoke Patriot way, a lot of what we think of is a mercenary style, a hardcore way of evaluating talent. Do your job. Your job is replaceable. Just do your job very good. And when you do your job and everyone does their job in unison, we have a well-functioning machine. It's why none of the it's why I hypothesize none of the Belichickian assistants go on to be great coaches, because just because you're really good at this job, whether it's a defensive coordinator, whether it's a special teams coordinator, whether it's an offensive coordinator, whether it's a quarterback's coach or a linebacker's coach, there's a reason this Belichickian ideology doesn't really translate to great head coaches necessarily, because what teams are hiring them on is based on their qualifications as a defensive guy, as an offensive guy, but they're just doing their job. Like, do your job extends from the players on the field down to the coaches to the front office. And if you do your job really well, that is not a great predictor of whether or not you will be a great leader. It's like the guy who gets promoted from whatever position they have in management, or whatever position they are, gets promoted to management in their company, and now they are managing people at the job they used to do. Just because they did the job well doesn't predict that they will be good at managing that job that they did, because leadership and doing a singular task over and over and practicing a skill set are two very different things. Leadership is actually the polar opposite of being a quote-unquote follower who does the same task over and over and over again. There is a distinct difference there. And so what you have is the Patriot way as a mercenary style. The Spurs way, we think of the same thing, very much a mercenary style, not a lot of personality. Popovich as this coach, and everyone buying in and executing a game plan. That's why Duncan was the perfect star and Kawhi was the perfect star. Popovich knew what he wanted, and the only time he's made a trade on draft day in the last 20 years was trading George Hill to get the draft pick that became Kawhi Leonard. The only trade Popovich has made on draft day, the only one, was for Kawhi Leonard. Andy Reid, same thing. Now, his is not so much a mercenary style, but he knows exactly what the vision is, and he sticks to it. It's why he was willing to trade two first-round picks to go get Patrick Mahomes. People forget that. They had the 27th pick. They traded with the Bills to draft Mahomes over Deshaun Watson because Andy Reid knew exactly what his vision was, and Mahomes was the quarterback. After 15 years of interviewing quarterbacks, Mahomes was the guy. He said, I've got to get that guy. He had Donovan McNabb, Alex Smith, and Patrick Mahomes. Those are the only quarterbacks Andy Reid has ever gone with because he has a vision and a model that he is going for. Alex Smith, obviously different than Donovan McNabb and Patrick Mahomes in distinct ways. It's why he moved on from Alex Smith, was that as Alex Smith got older, he had a very limited capacity. So it's a lot of times a mercenary style. And Astro Ball is that same way. Astro Ball was a cold-blooded style of evaluation. We built up our farm system by losing for a lot of years. That was Luhnow's big plan, being absolutely garbage for a lot of years and building up your farm system. And they all hit the majors at the same time, combined with diamonds in the rough like Jose Altuve, and then the big trade for Justin Verlander, boom, World Series title 2017. They trade for Gerrit Cole, pick him off the scrap heap in Pittsburgh, one of the lowest of low organizations in baseball. I did talk shit about my Padres earlier, but definitely Pittsburgh is right there with worst organizations with the Padres. And so they pick him up, as infused the analytics, and in a stone-cold mercenary style, boom, Gerrit Cole should have been the Cy Young, goes from May to October without allowing more than one earned run. just a mercenary style, fantastic job by the Astros. And the Astros had built the new Patriots way, the Spurs way, something that was sustainable for 20 years. And because the cheating scandal led to banishing the general manager and bringing in an outsider to replace him, and then going over and bringing in a guy like Dusty Baker to replace AJ Hinch and just keep the train moving, it was dramatically different than what they were doing before. And the owner of the team, I forgot his name now, Jim Crane, basically said, like, this is a new era of the Astros after the sign-stealing scandal led to Luna's firing and Hinch's firing. And the problem is they should not have had a new era, because the one they had before was a model of sustainability. And as everything started falling apart, as they obviously lost Cole to the inevitabilities of free agency, they traded for Zach Greinke because their pitching staff wasn't all there. And they dumped, Justin Verlander goes away with an arm injury. Jake Marisnyk, I know he's not a big guy, but it did hurt considering their lack of depth. He goes, and Yordan Alvarez misses the season. And George Springer is a free agent at the end of the season. And Altuve has his worst season of his career. Everything looks like it's falling apart in Houston. And now they are in the American League Division Series, when most people had written them off, including myself. And that is a testament to, like, a last heaval of keeping Astro Ball alive, because I think what they're waiting for is for some way to see if this James Crick guy, I believe that's his name, Crick is the new GM, whether he can infuse the young talent without the top draft pick. And I don't think we'll ever get to see whether Astro Ball would build the sustainable model of winning, because I think Crick is different than Luhnow. He obviously comes from Tampa Bay. Luhnow comes from St. Louis. And Luhnow spent a decade crafting a mercenary style of evaluation from his top level all the way down to the lowest levels of the minor leagues. And so that's kind of where things stood when it came to Luhnow and building a winner there versus what you have in, say, Tampa Bay, where Crick is coming from. It's a different style. It's not the same mercenary tactics, even though the rest of what Luhnow built is there, but they did technically cut off the head of the snake. And as everything started falling apart, it felt like this was the beginning of the decline for Houston, despite the fact they still had Bregman and Yordan Alvarez and at least a few more years of Greinke, which, you know, like Johnny Cueto, you can still fall apart with Greinke, despite the fact you have an MVP there and Michael Brantley in left field, and obviously Alvarez will be back. He just happened to miss this season. And they had murderer's mile last year. They had like nine guys deep in the third highest offensive rating in the history of baseball. But it did feel like the sign-stealing scandal was going to make its best efforts to make sure the Astros couldn't improve and couldn't succeed. We'll see. Time will tell how that ends up playing out. Quick check-in with the baseball game here. We have the White Sox were obviously up in, you know, Oakland. This has got to be tough because Oakland has lost elimination games year in and year out at home. They've got the bases loaded and two outs here. So we're going to see these next few pitches here. I'm going to filibuster a little bit as this keeps going. And this one's got to kind of suck for Oakland just because they've gone so many years now where they were they've been good. They keep getting eliminated as they get strike two in here, the bottom of the third, 1-2 count, bases loaded, two outs for Oakland. But, you know, they've been so good for so many years now that it's like this one's got to sting a little bit for them, because obviously they won the division for the first time and the Astros are falling down, and that division was just generally real awful this year. And so this one, if they don't pull it out, is going to sting for Oakland, considering that they now losing the wild card round 3 years in a row. 2 years, it was the wild card game, one game winner go home. They lost to the Yankees 2 years ago. The next year was supposed to be an improvement, and it didn't work out for Oakland. And obviously this year in the wild card round, as the White Sox seem to be supplanting both Cleveland and Minnesota in the AL Central, like you've been saying they were going to do for like 3 years, the same way people were saying it with the Padres, things aren't looking as hot for the Padres right now. All just holding out the hope and seeing how this thing is going to pan out in the short-term and long-term future for them as strike three comes in there. The White Sox get out of the inning. Whew! I mean, this is just, it's a tough road right now for the Oakland Athletics. Straining three runners on base there. No runs. White Sox are on their way to a championship. Don't you dare watch that Broncos-Jets game. If anyone's listening, I hope you didn't watch the Broncos-Jets game tonight. The Titans aren't going to play the Steelers this week. That was breaking news coming in today. No game between the Titans and Steelers. I don't know how they're going to reschedule that. I assume the Titans and Steelers will finish with 15 games this year. I don't think they're going to be able to reschedule that considering how fast these things go. They're not going to be able to reschedule that. But I was thinking that at some point you were going to have that where an outbreak occurred. There's just more people in a football locker room than a baseball one. And when COVID goes undetected like that, despite the infinite resources, you cannot cheat nature, I guess. And so that will probably finish with 15 games. Both the Titans and Steelers will finish with 15 games, which only benefits the Titans because, remember, the Titans are 3-0, and they're going to be 3-0 after week four. So it only stands to benefit the Tennessee Titans unless there's a way that they have a common opponent that they can switch the schedule around and then both get their bye weeks, and then they play a mutual game. The NFL's got to figure that out in a little bit of time here. But anyways, let's talk about hockey here because hockey is done now. If you want the basketball stuff, check out the podcast for the past couple days. We've been big into the basketball coverage. And I didn't get a chance to talk about hockey because basketball took priority here. But the Tampa Bay Lightning on Monday secured their first Stanley Cup since 2003 and the first of this era. And honestly, the last year in sports has been all about avenging the losses of dynasties that were nearly lost to history. After four heartbreaking winner-go-home losses, the Washington Nationals won their first World Series last October. Their counterparts in the city, the Washington Capitals in 2018, snapped the Washington, D.C. sports curse a year before that after three times they had the number one record in the sport and three times they were eliminated before the conference finals in the NHL. And Toronto, with the help of Kawhi Leonard, got their first championship after years and years of effort to get there. They finally got that championship. And so this whole year has been about that. The Chiefs won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. Now, to be fair, only avenging one time their first Super Bowl time, but nonetheless, they ran through it. And it was a tremendous, tremendous success for the Kansas City Chiefs. And when you have to pay your respects and wait longer to get your title, and by pay respects, I mean you pay your dues, you lose early in the playoffs, you make a comeback in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. When you have to do that, the first one always means more. The first championship just means more. It's why that first Padres championship will be so special for me. The Tampa Bay Lightning have that exuberant feeling so far through for the past few days. I don't know if there's a parade in Florida, but everything is open now in Florida, so it wouldn't surprise me if they do end up having that parade down there. We'll see how it goes. But basically, it just means more when you get that first championship. And for a decade, Tampa Bay has been just short in coming up with those titles. And what you're seeing, at least now, is the Tampa Bay Lightning, have been the model of success in hockey. I didn't realize this until like just a couple of years ago, and I never paid close attention because obviously they were getting eliminated and the NHL was all about teams like the Washington Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And so something that we saw is in true NHL spirit, Tampa Bay had to get there and then come back and then do all kinds of different things. And so what you're seeing here is Tampa Bay going from franchise of perpetual, not perpetual mediocrity, but a long run of not making it. 2011, they make an out of nowhere run after not making the playoffs for 5 years, and they make it to game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, one game away from the Stanley Cup. They lose to Boston in 2011. And they follow that up in 2015 after working their way back to that point. They had to get back to where they were before them. And then in 2015, they go on another amazing run to the Stanley Cup Final with a former lawyer-turned-Hall of Fame hockey coach in John Cooper. And then what you have that year, I mean, they weren't expected to get there, and they won a Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Let that be noted, duly noted, they won a game to get there in the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 7 over Toronto, they ended up winning that, and it worked out really well for them. So from there, they get to the Stanley Cup Final, not expected to do very much. And what happens is the Tampa Bay Lightning go on this run, and they lose to Chicago in the sixth game, and they lose. And the wheels of change in the NHL were in motion. And it seemed apparent that Tampa Bay was on their route, on the road to making the Stanley Cup runs for years and years to come. And they played the following year as Chicago and LA started to fade to the blackness of the NHL. We started to see Tampa Bay try and surplant them. And their best chance to do that came in 2016. They were number one in their division. Steve Stamkos was one of the best handful of players in the sport, and they coasted to the Eastern Conference Finals. And they met Pittsburgh, who was a team that for years had the best player in the sport. And for the third time, they made it to an Eastern Conference Finals Game 7. For a second time, they lost. They lost after winning in 2015 and losing in 2011. They took the L. And their best chance to become the mountain following the fall of Chicago and Los Angeles was stripped away from them, one game short of getting back to that pinnacle. And so what happened next was Pittsburgh and subsequently Washington, who had beat Pittsburgh for a couple of years, they took the mantle at the top. And in 2018, again, Tampa, number one record in their division, young player, young star, through the draft helped build that model of sustainability, was Nikita Kucherov. And Andrei Vasilevsky helped them in a very similar sense. And so they faced Washington that year, a team that had been dubbed the other big chokers of the sport, and they upset the Penguins to get there, faced Tampa Bay, went to a 7th Eastern Conference Finals for a fourth time. They lost. Like I mentioned before, Washington breaks that title drought. They get back to the championship, and all of a sudden, Tampa Bay is like, what do we do now? It's been 3 years, 2 different runs. Surprisingly, they're still competitive because of that model of sustainability, but also they're just kind of hanging around. And however, the sport was changing again. The East was still the far superior conference that they had been for years, but Pittsburgh and Washington were falling apart due to the difficulties of sustainability. Pittsburgh was losing in the first round. Washington was losing in the first round. everything was going in all these different directions. And so Tampa Bay is still sitting there. A chance to continue at the model that they were at. And so what we're going to see is Tampa Bay put themselves right in there. And this was the fuel that helped them go forward. The Lightning dominated the start of the season. They absolutely dominated the start of the season. And they had the third best regular season record in the history of the sport. It became clear as the wheels of change in the NHL were in motion that Tampa Bay was going to be the top of the mountain. Kucherov was the MVP. Vasilevsky won goalie of the year. Cooper was the coach of the year. They racked up all the big regular season awards. They got swept in the first round of the playoffs by an 8 seed. That's hockey for you. And this was not just a 16 seed losing to a 1 seed in March Madness. This was a 25-point rout in a 16-1 upset. This was the UMBC-Virginia game where UMBC beat them by 20, left no doubt who was the superior team. And Tampa Bay hadn't lost 2 games in a row all season, and they dropped 4 straight against a team that lost in the next round of the playoffs. And all of a sudden, Tampa Bay is sputtering. They're embarrassed. And like it was for Virginia, and like it is for a lot of these teams, this was a fuel that fired the comeback season for Tampa Bay. They and the Boston Bruins were the two powerhouses of the sport. Boston lost Game 7 of the finals to St. Louis, a team that, while they were good the next year, fell apart very quickly, very clearly a fluke champion of the sport. Kind of like Toronto, but more like the 04 Pistons, but hockey's different. It's a fluke champion. I guess Washington could be considered that way, like in MLB, because MLB and NHL are fairly similar because their playoffs are so random. It was a fuel that fired up that comeback season, and then COVID postponed the season. And the Lightning moved into a bubble that served as a disadvantage for teams with a good regular season record, more so than just the NHL playoffs as a whole, serving as a disadvantage for teams with a better record. And as if this were like some final exorcism for the Tampa Bay Lightning, they had made 8 playoff appearances, 5 Eastern Conference Finals, 2 Stanley Cups, and 1 pandemic with this roster. The Lightning finally got one. And they didn't just win. They dominated the Stanley Cup playoffs. They never faced elimination in the entire bubble. After they routed Boston in 5 games in round 2, it became an assumption that this was Tampa Bay's cup to lose. During the last month, they never wavered in maintaining people's confidence in them, not even when they lost a double overtime game to the New York Islanders, not when they lost game 1 to Dallas in the final by 3 goals. Tampa Bay just kept rolling and rolling and rolling, showing that now, after years of being second fiddle, they were rewarded for being a sustainable winner. First round exit be damned. These last 2 years are the Lightning's NHL, and it will last a lifetime for these fans. Time will tell whether they add another Stanley Cup to their growing collection, but for a while, Tampa Bay fans can enjoy this one because, damn it, they have earned it. They have earned it. Hey, Martez, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Martez, I want to bring you in for the last few minutes here. Cool. What'd you make of game 1 of the NBA Finals, my friend?
Oh, man, you know what? Honestly, I didn't catch it live. However, I did go back and watch a little bit of it, and I got some analysis from it. I felt it's hard to say what I'm getting ready to say, but I felt like the Heat may have lost the series last night. You know, to have the Lakers up by 13 and not seal the deal, that's a tough way to lose. And I'm actually going for the Heat, but I think the Heat may have lost the series last night. But I could be engaging in hyperbole right now, but I do feel like the Heat cost themselves the championship last night. That's the only thing I can add to it right now is the fact that the Heat dropped the ball.
Yeah, I that seems to be a bit of the consensus, I think, just because of how grotesque that blowout was. Like, they got smoked yesterday, and I think Bam and Tyler Hero combined for, like, 22 points or something, and I said, like, that's the key for them. Bam and Tyler games are going to be what helps them get it.
Yep. And the Lakers went on to went on a 75-30 run. Like, that's unheard of, you know, and I didn't even think the Lakers – had that kind of arsenal in them to go on a 75-30 run, but they did, and that definitely wasn't a good look. But we'll see what happens in game two. The Heat definitely have to respond and respond loudly.
Yeah. So here's a good question for you. I think by the time we're here next week, I think game five will be going on. So do you think we'll be done by this point? Do you think we'll be done by game five?
Okay, I'm going to talk. I know I talk out of both sides of my mouth sometimes, but I'm going to just – because I picked the Heat to win this series, I kind of got to honor this, honor it. So I think it'll be tied up by the time we be here next week.
Ooh, I mean, if that's the case, then they got a shot. If it becomes a best of three, they've got a shot.
Yeah, but check this out, brother. Maybe they needed this. Maybe they needed to fall back a few notches. You know, they already were the underdog, but maybe they needed to be the super underdog. So everybody's already giving the Larry O'Brien trophy to the Lakers. Maybe the Heat needs this, you know, to really win this series, to feel like the ultimate underdog.
Well, I just found out looking up that Bam is doubtful for game two, so that's really going to put a dent in their chances if they don't get Bam back. Because it looks like Gorian might be done, or at the very least ineffective because of his injury, but man, that's going to be interesting to watch. I like the boldness of saying it's going to be 2-2, because that's the only way Miami's going to get this one done.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Martez, for stopping by at the end here. I wanted to get you in here because I know you've been good with the basketball analysis. I wanted to get him in. That's our producer, Martez, running here at Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Thank you.
No problem.
All right, everybody. We're coming down to the very last moments here. So, let me check this out real quick. It is still 3-0 in favor of the Chicago White Sox. It looks like they're going to hold that one out. 2 hours away for the Padres. So you know what? Just hanging on here. Just hanging on by a thread. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash or on the Take It Easy Podcast Network. Thanks to our buddy Martez for producing. Thank you to everyone continuing to show your loyalty here. It is greatly, greatly appreciated. If you're checking us out on the podcast, please download, rate, review, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Wherever and whenever you may be listening, thank you. Be on the lookout for some football talk. I know we didn't get too much football today. That's what happens when you have the Broncos and Jets on Thursday Night Football. But anyways, thank you everybody for stopping in. And we'll talk to you again next week. This has been the Take It Easy Radio Show. Thank you for your loyalty. Go Padres. And until next time, take it easy.